It was a scene that would be almost unimaginable just months ago, but it has become a reality. At least so far, the two Koreas may be ending their decades-long war. North Korean leader Kim Jong-un received by the South Korean president at the DMZ in a summit meant to end the wars of the Koreas. In this debate, we will look at how this should warrant the end of the U.S. presence in South Korea and how that would impact U.S.'s plans as a whole when it comes to China.
North Korean leader Kim Jong-un came to the border to shake the hand of South Korean President Moon Jae-in, marking powerful symbolism in contrast to the warlike rhetoric of years past. The leaders of the two Koreas then sat down for talks, spending a morning and afternoon together to iron out an agreement to work toward an end to the Korean War and lasting peace. They agreed to create a shared office for officials in the North, further exchanges, and to work on reconnecting railways and restarting family reunions. They also vowed to work toward complete denuclearization.
It is very significant that North Korea took the measure of freezing its nuclear program first. It will be a valuable beginning for the complete denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula. I clearly declared that the South and North will closely cooperate for the complete denuclearization.
This was the third inter-Korean summit after leadership meetings in 2000 and 2007. Previous agreements between the two nations, together with other states, have fallen apart, something Kim Jong-un hopes will not be repeated.
We will make efforts to create good results by communicating closely in order to make sure our agreement signed today before the entire world will not end as just a beginning like previous agreements before today.
The first 12 points of the Panmunjom Declaration stressed economic development and peace building, which will require the removal of UN sanctions. Just the 13th point mentioned denuclearization. Still, experts see benefits.
So even if they are going to have, say, 5 or 7 or 10 quiet years, well, it will be a good news. The real discussions will be held later on the coming Trump-Kim summit. Maybe a month or 2 months later. However, some kind of good environment and good mood will be extremely helpful.
South Korean President Moon Jae-in also accepted Kim Jong-un's invitation to summit in Pyongyang this fall. With the completion of the historic summit between South Korean President Moon Jae-in and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, attention now turns to the potential summit between Kim and U.S. President Donald Trump. Amid intense speculation, however, no date or location has yet been announced. Frank Smith, Press TV, Goyang, South Korea.
Our guest joining us for this edition of the debate, Marcus Papadopoulos, publisher and editor at Politics First, joins us from London. And also from New York, we have Richard William Murphy, who's a former U.S. diplomat. Gentlemen, welcome. Richard William Murphy, let me start with you. This obviously was a slice of history that was unfolding in front of our eyes and the world. And hard to imagine what the people from the both Koreas were feeling. But in terms of the technicality of the two being at war, does this summit mean now that the war at this point can be claimed that it's over, or does it have to go through an official process?
Well, I think there's a great deal of work to be done on Washington's side and on North Korea's side before we can count on the end of hostilities and the establishment of a peace agreement with North Korea. It's an encouraging beginning that the two leaders, North and South Korea, have met and they will continue to meet.
Marcus Papadopoulos, our guest there, says that there needs to be, obviously, the U.S. involvement here and also how that's going to pan out in terms of the meeting of South Korea, I'm sorry, Kim Jong-un, perhaps, with the U.S. president. But why should that have a bearing if the two Koreas by themselves want peace amongst themselves? Does the U.S. need to be part of this?
Well, first of all, let me say this, that anyone who sincerely supports global peace and global stability will be applauding today's meeting. In fact, they will be rejoicing at today's meeting. I would like to remind people of a famous quote by Albert Einstein when he said that peace cannot be kept by force. It can only be achieved by understanding. Today's meeting was a momentous one. It was a historic one. We had the leaders of the two Koreas talking about the denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula, officially bringing to an end the Korean War. Both leaders spoke about one Korea. Both leaders spoke about one Korean people. Now, that said, there are enormous challenges ahead, absolutely enormous. The challenges will be Herculean. And of course, one of the challenges will involve the United States of America, because whilst Pyongyang and Seoul are now talking, and I sincerely hope that these talks will be not short-term, will be long-term, of course, American involvement will be crucial, especially as far as North Korea is concerned, because North Korea does legitimately feel threatened by America. There are over 20,000 American soldiers stationed in South Korea. There are 50,000 American soldiers stationed in Japan. There are 6,000 American soldiers based in Guam. So that is a reason why American involvement in these talks will be crucial.
So, Richard Murphy, if I may conclude based on both, not only your statements, but our guests are from London, that if the talks between North Korea and the U.S. fail, do you have me, Richard Murphy? Perhaps. Okay. Do you have me? Let me finish my question. If the talks between the U.S. fail, does that mean that the relationship between North Korea and South Korea also has to fail?
Does it mean that North and South Korea talks have to fail?
If the U.S. talks with North Korea do not bear fruit, what happens to the relationship between North Korea and South Korea? Does it mean that their summit that happened today therefore has hit a dead end?
No. Today was a good step between the two Koreas. But for there to be peace, you just have to look at the 65 years of history that have passed. It's going to be essential that the Americans, the United Nations, will be involved in a peace agreement. There's no way that the North and South can reach a peace agreement entirely on their own.
Okay, and that's the whole question here. Why not, Marcus Papadopoulos? We know, of course, the U.S. involvement, but if two nations want to have peace amongst themselves, why do they need to have the U.S. give their either stamp of approval or permission?
Well, in peace talks between Pyongyang and Seoul, it won't just involve America, though, of course, America will be a leading party to the talks. It will also involve China and the Russian Federation. Now, in regard to the forthcoming meeting between the North Korean leader and President Trump, well, if that meeting fails, and I don't see any reason why it will fail. I mean, it won't be a success at the first meeting, but if it does fail, then in theory, there's no reason why it will have a detrimental effect on the peace talks between the two Koreas. But in reality, of course, America does exert a lot of influence on the South Korean government. And if the Americans feel that their talks with the North Koreans are not going in the direction that they want them to, then we can say the South Korean government could start to be influenced by the Americans. I would argue that South Korea is a client state on America. It heavily depends on America for its economic security and also its military security as well.
Richard Murphy, one of the core issues here, if not perhaps the most important one, that will be a key challenge is the definition of what denuclearization is going to be for both North Korea, South Korea and the U.S., but in particular, the U.S. demand for denuclearization, and one that is accepted by all parties. Do you think that that's going to remain the biggest challenge?
That challenge has not, the parties haven't really engaged on that, neither the North and South Koreans nor the United States. Our goal is nuclearization of North Korea, denuclearization of North Korea. But I would just caution you, we're at the very preliminary stages. We don't have details on our side from the South Koreans about the nuance of today's meeting between Pyongyang and Seoul. So let's not rush ahead to saying what's going to be happening. We don't know yet.
Well, that is indeed true. However, Marcus Papadopoulos, we need to give some direction in terms of some of the premises that might happen in the future. Let's look at, for example, how this how the results of this summit perhaps might bring about some expectations from North Korea. One of the things that I'm guessing that North Korea would want removed are U.S. troops. By some accounts, the U.S. Would no longer be necessary there to defend the South. Do you think that that is a reasonable expectation that the North would have? And in turn, what are the possibilities of that happening?
Well, as the guest in Washington said, we are at a very early stage. The details of today's meeting are very sketchy, though there were some main points which have been reported. But undoubtedly, the Americans will want to see North Korea give up its nuclear weapons. And I find it very difficult to believe that North Korea would give up its nuclear weapons. Why has North Korea developed nuclear weapons? Simply to ensure its security. Nuclear weapons constitute a country's absolute security against an attack from another country. America has never invaded or bombed a country which has nuclear weapons. That is a factor as to why the Americans are now prepared to sit down with the North Koreans and try and resolve their differences. Because, yes, in a war between North Korea and America, the Americans would win. Of course they would. But there would be immense American casualties. In the 1990s, Bill Clinton contemplated a war against North Korea. He asked his generals to put together a report of what the casualties would be for the Americans. And it was estimated by those American generals that America would incur something like 100,000 military casualties. So, yes, we can talk about the Americans pulling out their 20,000 or so soldiers from South Korea, and in return, North Korea destroying its nuclear weapons. But I'm not so sure Pyongyang would agree to that, because after all, 20,000 soldiers can be withdrawn and then can be deployed back in a relatively short period of time. If you destroy your nuclear weapons, well, that will take a considerable time to have them again, to build them again.
Many of the outlets out there, Richard Murphy, are saying that now, because of the relationship that's established today between South and North Korea, and the goodwill that has been there now from today, that's a contrast to the way that Trump is in terms of his aggressive stance, and that this puts pressure now on the U.S. president to go into the talks with North Korea. Do you agree?
I don't sense that President Trump feels pressure to go into the talks. He's interested in the talks. He's interested in exploring whether he can be the American president that works out a peace agreement between North and South Korea. I think that's the pressure of history on him. I can do something that the others have failed to do.
Marcus Papadopoulos, how much do you think this... actually, do you have a reaction to what Richard Murphy has there? Said there.
Yes, I think there's an element of truth to that. Though, of course, we need to remember that Donald Trump is not a man of peace. He has demonstrated that he is a man of war on two occasions in Syria. But I don't think we should view the peace talks today between Pyongyang and Seoul and the forthcoming meeting between the North Korean leader and the American leader as a matter of who has won and who has lost. Because I don't believe that North Korea has won or lost. I don't believe South Korea has won or lost. Indeed, I don't believe America has won or lost. Humanity has won. Because should there be a war on the Korean Peninsula, that would be a catastrophic disaster, not just for the region, but for the entire world. So let's just say that mankind has won.
Richard Murphy, how much of the stance that North Korea has, including what has happened between the two Koreas, is attributed to China's influence on North Korea? Do you think that North Korea acted solely out of the sanctions that were exerted on it by the U.S., or do you think that it was China that was pivotal?
Well, I think China is a major influence on North Korea, and its sanctions, which have been intensified in recent past, are having an effect. The question that I'm sure President Trump has on his mind is North Korea now at a point where it feels secure enough, given its nuclear successes and its testing of nuclear weapons, that it can turn to the needs of development of its own country, the economic development? It remains a very, very deprived population, and that's a pressure on Kim, President Kim, to produce a better future for his people.
Marcus Papadopoulos, you talked about Russia also being somewhat of a piece here of what is going on in terms of the dynamics between all three countries. What kind of role does Russia have here?
Even before President Trump entered the White House, the relationship between China and North Korea was deteriorating. It's certainly the case that Chinese diplomats who I've spoken to have told me that China is losing patience with North Korea. And what we have seen before President Trump entered the White House and since he entered the White House is that North Korea has started to move closer, politically speaking, towards Russia. I wouldn't say that North Korea, as we speak, is now in Russia's sphere of influence, but it is certainly starting to gravitate towards Russia. And whilst there are sanctions on North Korea, it is very clear that Russia has been assisting North Korea. And North Korea and Russia have enjoy a very close relationship, a very close friendship, because had it not been for the assistance that the Soviet Union provided to the North Koreans during the Korean Civil War, then it's difficult to see how the Americans and their South Korean allies would not have conquered the whole of the Korean Peninsula. So certainly Russia is going to be a very important player in these talks from this day onwards. Russia wants to make sure that America in no way becomes the dominant power on a Korean Peninsula, a peninsula in which there is a reunited Korea. Because should that happen, then it is plausible that American forces would be in the north part of Korea and therefore close to the border with Russia. Now that is, you know, perhaps I'm jumping ahead of myself, but as far as the Kremlin is concerned, they want to make sure that if there is to be a reunified Korea, then it has to suit Russian national security and Russian national interests.
Very well. We're going to end it there. Thank you very much, Marcus Papadopoulos, publisher and editor at Politics First. Thank you, Richard William Murphy, former U.S. diplomat there from New York. Thanks for tuning in to another edition of The Debate. For Mikhail Vitale, entire team in the capital of Tehran, it's goodbye.